Nineveh, just not even a century or so later, is not just a place out there known for wickedness. At this time, Nineveh, the capital of the Assyrian Empire, is a rising world power. And for people reading this later, would be like, these are the people who destroyed the northern kingdom of Israel. These are the people who came and burned our cities and killed our families. That's who this message is going to. And so this, for readers not long after these events occurred, would have been quite a shocking call for God to give to Jonah, unless it were a message of like, you know, I'm going to destroy you, which it is. And we're going to look a little bit more next week about when Jonah actually gets to Nineveh, what he says and what God is doing there. But right now we're just focusing on kind of this first scene in the book of Jonah. So it's not an easy call. And what does Jonah do in verse 3? But Jonah ran away from the Lord and headed for Tarshish. He went down to Joppa, where he found a ship bound for that port. After paying the fare, he went aboard and sailed for Tarshish to flee from the Lord. A couple weeks ago, Pastor Matt in the Gospel of John was talking about a passage in Isaiah that referenced in Isaiah 6 when Isaiah is called. And if you remember, the angel comes with the hot coals and says, "Who will go for me?" And Isaiah says, "Here am I, send me." What Jonah says is, "I'm not here. Don't send me," right? And he goes the other direction. And what I want us to see, we'll see next week why Jonah ran. And that's a big focus of the book, is why he ran. But we'll kind of set that aside for next week. And right now I just want to look at what great lengths he went to run away. It's not like he just stayed where he was. First he goes to Joppa, which is on the coast of the Mediterranean Sea. And so he's in... I don't know if I can do this mirror image, so just flip east and west in your minds from what I'm doing. He's in Israel, and he goes down to Joppa on the coast of the Mediterranean, which, from what I read, is about or at least 50 miles by foot. So this is a multi-day journey just to get to the port. And keep in mind that Nineveh is over here. So he goes this way to board a ship for Tarshish, which we don't know the exact location of, but many think it is in Spain, or something like that. It's on the other end of the Mediterranean Sea. In other words, for an ancient Israelite, this is literally the other end of the known world from Nineveh. He buys a fare. He makes a multi-day journey just to get to the port, and he's trying to go in the whole other direction. He is committed to running away. He's not just avoiding or pretending he didn't hear. He's making great efforts to get to the other side of the world in Nineveh. Verse 4, then the Lord sent a great wind on the sea, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. All the sailors were afraid, and each cried out to his own God, and they threw the cargo into the sea to lighten the ship. So in the ancient world, the sea was a place that was often feared. It was seen as, in kind of these, you know, other religions of the time, it was seen as this force of chaos that kind of, the gods didn't necessarily have total control over it. It was this chaotic force, especially because storms could rise up on it. And this wasn't, you know, when you get a storm today and you might have a boat with, you know, GPS and radar and all these things to show you where to go even if you can't see. This is something severe when a storm comes up and extremely dangerous. And beyond that, we see that even the sailors themselves were afraid. So this isn't even just your run-of-the-mill thunderstorm. It says, the Lord sent a great wind, and such a violent storm arose that the ship threatened to break up. So the ship is literally, the boards are snapping and breaking because of the force of the wind and the waves. And the sailors themselves, who are on the sea all the time, are afraid. And they're each crying out to their own God. This is kind of like their, let's everyone pray to as many gods as you can think of. Maybe one of them will be able to do something about this situation. It's kind of a throwing, you know, everything out there, shotgun approach. Let's just try to hit some god that's going to help us here. So they are in a state of panic. But we notice in the second half of verse 5, but Jonah had gone below deck where he lay down and fell into a deep sleep. And so not sure if this translation kind of seems to say he went down when the storm started. He could have been asleep already, but either way, Jonah is asleep, in some way unaware of what is going on, sleeping in this great storm, while all these sailors are on deck pulling the ropes and getting everything together and yelling at each other what to do, and in the middle of each command just throwing up some prayer to some god that they've heard of before, hoping that something will work. Throwing the cargo over, they're saying, at this point, forget the money we're going to make on this. We just need to survive. And Jonah's sleeping in the bottom of the boat. The captain of the ship went to him and said, how can you sleep? Get up and call on your God. Maybe he will take notice of us, and we will not perish. Now, for a moment, I want you to put yourself in Jonah's shoes. God told you, go to Nineveh. You packed your things, made a multi-day journey to Joppa, got a boat ticket, and got on this boat and fell asleep because you're trying to run away from God. And then you get, someone shakes you awake, and the first thing that they say to you is, pray to God. Pray to your God. It's probably the last thing Jonah wants to do or wants to hear right now. And this being from a sailor who's not even a believer, right? They're praying to all these other gods. They're just these sailors from Joppa. And he's like, all right, I'm running from God. He's sleeping. He wakes up. Pray to God. And we don't know if he does or not, actually. And I won't bring that up. It doesn't say whether he does or not. But even the sailor says, maybe your God can do something. This God that Jonah is running away from. Verse 7, the sailors said to each other, come, let us cast lots to find out who is responsible for this calamity. And at this point, again, if you're Jonah, you've got to be thinking, I'm in trouble now. Right? Because at this point, I'm sure things are starting to click. This storm is not just chance. The captain waking me up and telling me to pray to God is not just chance. And now they're casting lots, which for them was how they determined what the God wanted them to know or do or communicate. And Jonah knows he's found out. And he certainly is. They cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Verse 8, so they ask him, tell us, who is responsible for making all this trouble for us? What do you do? Where do you come from? What is your country? From what people are you? Who are you? Right? Who did we let on our boat that is causing all this trouble? Who are you? And how Jonah answers is interesting. He answered, I am a Hebrew, and I worship the Lord, the God of heaven, who made the sea and the land. Now, Jonah has to probably be feeling a little bit of tension here, too, of the shame of, like, I'm a prophet of this God, and the reason that we are dying is because I didn't listen to that God. And he introduces this God as the Lord, Yahweh, the God of heaven. So not all these other sub-gods that you've been praying to. The God of heaven, the King of kings, the Lord of lords, is my God. He's the one who's causing this storm. And not only that, he is the one who made the sea and the land. And so at this point, right, because they would think, oh, the sea is this chaotic force that's out of control. We've got to pray to some God that can maybe like get us out from under the power of the sea. And now they're realizing, oh, this is not just some chaotic storm that we need deliverance from. This is the God who created the sea. He is actively putting this storm upon us. Job 38. God is answering Job in that book, and he says this, or who shut the sea with doors when it bursts out from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band and prescribed limits for it and set bars and doors and said, thus far shall you come, and no farther. And here shall your proud waves be stayed. This God is the God who has control over this chaotic, dangerous, deadly force of the sea and all its storms. And so this God is causing this storm. And so rightly they respond in verse 10, this terrified them. In the English Standard Version, it says they were exceedingly afraid, which in verse 5, we read that they were afraid. But then here now, they were exceedingly afraid. Now that we don't just know the storm is going on, we know that the God of the heavens has sent this storm upon us. What are we going to do? This terrified them, and they asked, "What have you done?" Because by this point, they knew he was running away from the Lord because he had already told them. So at this point, when he told them who he was, he said, "Look, here's the reason that we're dying. I'm trying to run to the other side of the world when God told me to go to Nineveh." And he said, "Why did you do that? We were praying to all these other gods. You are a prophet of the most powerful God, and you went the other way? And we let you on our boat?" They were exceedingly afraid. Verse 11, the sea was getting rougher and rougher. So things, it's not like there's this bad storm, this unprecedented storm, and they're just trying to manage it. It's getting worse and worse by the minute. The sea was getting rougher and rougher, so they asked him, "What should we do to you to make the sea calm down for us?" Okay, God's angry with you. What do we got to do to make this stop? Jonah replies, "Pick me up and throw me into the sea," he replied, "and it will become calm. I know that it is my fault that this great storm has come upon you." Now, when he says, "throw me into the sea," he's not asking to go for a swim. Right? You're in the Mediterranean, middle of the Mediterranean Sea, and there is this unprecedented storm. It doesn't matter how good of a swimmer you are. And we don't even know if Jonah didn't grow up on the coast. Who knows if he knows how to swim at all? He's going down. To be thrown over is essentially say, "Kill me." That's the solution. Throw me in the water. But interestingly, even the sailors are a little more noble than that. Verse 13, it said, "Instead, the men did their best to row back to land." They're like, "Okay, I know this is bad, but if we kill the prophet of this God, I'm not sure things are going to get much better for us. Let's just, one last effort, let's row as hard as we can, see if we can find some other way other than killing the prophet of the Most High God to make this storm stop and save our lives." But they could not, for the sea grew even wilder than before. Things are continuing to get worse. Then they cried to the Lord, "O Lord, please do not let us die for taking this man's life. Do not hold us accountable for killing an innocent man, for you, O Lord, have done as you pleased." So again, you see here their concern for killing Jonah, and that God is going to judge them for that. And so they cry out to the Lord and say, "Okay, we're going to do it, God, whatever you please, but please don't make us guilty of murdering this man." And what's interesting here, we don't know, when the captain came to Jonah and said, "Pray to your God," maybe he did, maybe we didn't, but we don't have record that he did. And yet here, the pagan sailors are crying out to the Lord, saying, "We'll do whatever, just save us from this storm, and please don't judge us for throwing Jonah overboard." So they throw Jonah in, the raging sea swallows him up, he sinks. And then verse 15, they took Jonah and threw him overboard. He sinks. The raging sea grew calm. At this, the men greatly feared the Lord. There it is again. More fear. Greatly feared the Lord. And they offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows to him. They worshiped God. They were just crying out to all these other gods. They're like, "We've seen nothing like this." And I don't want to overstate it. It's not like these sailors necessarily went on to be like the next evangelists, or they might have just worshipped Yahweh along with these other gods. We don't know. But in this moment, they couldn't help but worship God for delivering them from this storm. Verse 17, but the Lord provided a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was inside the fish 3 days and three nights. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the rest of the passage, kind of in one chunk now, and kind of look at that as a whole rather than go particularly verse through by verse what Jonah says. What's going to happen here is Jonah is now going to talk to God. After running and running, he's now going to talk to God. And I just want us to listen and observe how Jonah's responding to God, how he even views being eaten by the fish. So I'll read the rest of our passage. We're going to stop there then at the end of chapter 2. And make some more observations. From inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, "In my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. From the depths of the grave, I called for help, and you listened to my cry. You hurled me into the deep, into the very heart of the seas, and the currents swirled about me. All your waves and breakers swept over me. I said, I have been banished from your sight, yet I will look again toward your holy temple. The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed has wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever. But you brought my life up from the pit, O Lord my God. When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Those who cling to worthless idols forfeit the grace that could be theirs. But I, with a song of thanksgiving, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. Salvation comes from the Lord. And the Lord commanded the fish, and it vomited Jonah onto dry land. So, how does Jonah view being eaten by the fish? I often view it as like, man, this day couldn't get any worse, right? He's in the storm, he's thrown over, now he's in the disgusting belly of this fish for 3 days and for 3 nights. But that's not how Jonah sees it, is it? He sees being eaten by the fish as actually salvation, delivering him. He sees, if I hadn't been eaten by this fish, he says, I would have gone down to the roots of the mountains. I would have been on the bottom of the ocean, dead. He says, in my distress. So it seems, what we see here is it seems like as he was sinking in the ocean, at that point he cried out to God. So maybe God, at this point, I know I've run a far away. I'm nowhere near Nineveh right now. But if now you would save me, I would commit to you. I would do what you say. And a fish comes. In verse 2, it says, from the depths of the grave I called for help. What's interesting is that that phrase, depths of the grave, is more literally the belly of Sheol. And he's praying this from the belly of the fish. So he's saying, from the belly of the fish, you saved me from the belly of death. And he sees this as God's deliverance. He's all these metaphors of seaweed being wrapped around him and waves crashing over him and being thrown about in the water. At that point, he's like, I'm in trouble. But now here in the fish, I'm actually safe. That you saved me. And so like the sailors, Jonah has been delivered. And like the sailors, Jonah responds with worship, offering sacrifices and making vows to the Lord. In his concluding praise of his worship, the main thrust of what he's praising God for is right there at the end of verse 9, salvation comes from the Lord. For those of you who have kids, on the back of the kids' bulletin, I noticed a little fill-in-the-blank thing today is that phrase, salvation comes from the Lord. It's a central theme in the book of Jonah, and really of the whole Bible. It's a common phrase in the Old Testament. Salvation belongs to the Lord or comes from the Lord. The book of Jonah itself has actually a lot more to say about that phrase, salvation comes from the Lord, that we'll look about next week. And sadly, Jonah actually has a lot more to learn about what that phrase means. But that is what we see in this passage, that salvation comes from the Lord. What I want to do now is kind of zoom out from the passage, take that story, and I want to look at a couple points of, like, what does this teach us more big picture about God? And then end with a couple things of how do we apply those things about God in our lives? The first thing, it's not a good idea to run from God. Right, it's foolish to run from God. When we read Jonah's story, it's almost comical, right, in a way, to think that he goes so far and so out of his way to get away from Nineveh. But not only that, but that we think of him like, you can't actually do that in the first place, right? In Psalm 139, we read this. It's a psalm of David. So David writes, where shall I go from your spirit? Or where shall I flee from your presence? If I ascend to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. Even the bottom of the ocean, God is there. If I take the wings of the morning and dwell in the uttermost parts of the sea, that's where Jonah was, even there your hand shall lead me, and your right hand shall hold me. If I say, surely the darkness shall cover me, and the light about me be night, even the darkness is not dark to you. The night is bright as the day, for darkness is as light with you. It's not possible to run from God, and yet he's going, he's thinking, maybe if I get to the other side of the known world, and we look at them and be like, Jonah, come on. You know better than that. But it's not just Jonah, is it? From the very beginning, Genesis 3, Adam and Eve eat of the fruit. It says they hear God walking in the garden. What's the first thing they do? They hide. They try to run away from the presence of God. And we do the same today. When God calls us to do things, we often run. Now, not many of us are buying plane tickets or things like that, but the idea is that Jonah was running from the presence of the Lord. So how the passage reads. he was running from the presence of the Lord. And there's times where we either try to run from the presence of the Lord, or we just pretend that he's not present when he asks us to do something. It could be like Jonah, where God is calling you to go and talk to someone about Christ, and you think, I'm just going to not do that. Right, though you're not physically going anywhere, it's still a running from the Lord. But it can be a variety of other things. It's not just, you know, preaching or telling people about Christ. But any time we sin, we are in effect running from God. If you're going to that website, that's a running from the presence of the Lord, because you're pretending God doesn't know what I'm searching for. God doesn't know. He can't actually see what I'm looking at. When you're engaging in that conversation at work that is not honoring to Christ, you're running from the presence of the Lord because you are pretending and tricking yourself into thinking, God can't hear this. I am away from the presence of the Lord here at my job. When I go here, all bets are off. Or sharing that like juicy piece of gossip with someone. Well, God can't hear. I'm whispering. He's not going to hear it here. Running from the presence of God. And all of this is foolish because he sees all, he is everywhere. Just as foolish as it was for Jonah to try to go to Tarshish, thinking he could get away from God's call in his life, so it is for us when we assume we can evade God to live our lives how we want to live them. It's foolish to run from God. Second thing that we learn here is that God mercifully hinders our running away. God, in this story, chases Jonah down. Running away becomes progressively more difficult for Jonah to do. Right? He got to Joppa fine enough. You know, long journey. Who knows what happened, but he got there. No big deal. He bought a boat ticket. They got off the dock fine. Then the wind starts to pick up. And he's in this storm. Okay, things are getting a little harder now. I'm not sure if he's going to make it to Tarshish. But not only that, now there's this pagan captain shaking him awake, saying, pray to God. God is chasing him down in his running away. It's getting harder and harder. Not only that, but he's like, okay, well, let's have these guys cast some lots, Jonah, and see who's really at fault here. Let's get your attention a little bit as you keep trying to run away. The lots fall on him, and then he's like, okay, look, into the sea you go. And then there's this fish, right? All these things, it gets progressively harder and harder. The fish takes him back into the dry land. It's progressively more and more difficult for Jonah to run away. But I want us to consider that God making this so difficult is actually merciful. It actually is God's mercy for Jonah. Because as we'll see next week, what he's doing is actually restoring Jonah to the call he originally called him to do, to go to Nineveh and preach this message. And he's restoring him as a prophet called by God, despite his running away. God says, Jonah, you are my person. You are my prophet. I have chosen you. You can run away, but I will not let you. I will let you run, but it's going to get progressively harder and harder so that you will turn back to me and receive my mercy. What would happen, what would have happened if God had let Jonah go unhindered? He said, okay, Jonah, go ahead, off your own way. I'm not going to bring any storm. No captain's going to tell you to pray. No lots are going to be cast. I'll let you get to Tarshish and do whatever you want. What would have happened? Jonah might have been lost. Jonah eventually would have died and might have died apart from the Lord. In Hebrews chapter 12, the writer of Hebrews is talking about the discipline of the Lord. And when things in our lives do sometimes get difficult, especially if we've been running, he says, have you forgotten the exhortation that addresses you as sons? My son, do not regard lightly the discipline of the Lord, nor be weary when reproved by him. For the Lord disciplines the one he loves and chastises every son whom he receives. It is for discipline that you have to endure. God is treating you as sons. For what son is there whom his father does not discipline? If you are left without discipline, in which you all have participated, then you are illegitimate children and not sons. God disciplines the ones he loves. Because he loves Jonah, he will not let him get to Tarshish. Because he has a plan for Jonah, he will not let him run unhindered. He will make it harder and harder for Jonah to run away because of his love and his mercy upon Jonah. When those who are called by God and loved by God try to run from God, he will mercifully make it increasingly difficult to do so. The third point that we can learn from this passage is that God, and it goes hand in hand with what we just talked about, God's purposes cannot be thwarted. Nothing can stop what God has determined will happen in his plan of salvation. God told Jonah, arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and call out against it. And in chapter 3, guess what happens? Jonah goes to Nineveh and preaches that message. After everything that happened in the first two chapters of Jonah that we read about in this book, we're back at the same place. God is saying, no, Jonah is going to preach to Nineveh. That is what I've determined. That is my plan, and that will happen. No running to Joppa, no getting on a boat, no storm, no lots. I'll even send a fish to eat him if I need to. This, and I'm going to take him back, and that's what he's going to do. Why is it that God's purposes can't be thwarted? Why is it that we can have confidence in this? Because salvation of the sailors, salvation of Jonah himself in this story, salvation does not belong to Jonah. It doesn't depend on him. Salvation comes from the Lord. It doesn't belong to the runaway prophet. I want to read Mark chapter 4. So this is a story of Jesus. It actually has a lot of parallels with Jonah. Many of you have maybe heard this connection before. But I want to read this story and show some stark differences, despite the similarities, in Mark 4 that show, yeah, salvation actually doesn't come from us. It doesn't come from a prophet like Jonah. It comes from our Lord Jesus Christ. Mark 4, verse 35. Mark tells this story. On that day, when evening had come, Jesus said to his disciples, let us go across to the other side. And leaving the crowd, they took him with them in the boat, just as he was. And other boats were with him. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves were breaking into the boat, so that the boat was already filling. Already seeing some similarities here, right? But he, Jesus, was in the stern, asleep on the cushion. Some more similarities. And they woke him and said to him, teacher, do you not care that we are perishing? And he awoke and rebuked the wind and said to the sea, peace, be still. And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm. He said to them, "Why are you so afraid? Have you still no faith?" And like the sailors in Jonah, they were filled with great fear and said to one another, "Who then is this that even the wind and the sea obey him?" And Jonah, when the storm was coming, they found out who Jonah was. They were like, "Who?" Or like that it was his fault. They're like, "Who are you?" But here, the disciples, Jesus calms the sea, and they say, "Who are you that even the wind and the sea obey you? You didn't need to get thrown in to the ocean. You just told it to stop. Who are you?" Well, Jesus answers that question in Matthew chapter 12. You don't have to, you can turn there if you want, but I'm going to be there very briefly, so you can save the turning if you want. And we'll come back to this passage next week as well, and because it's a passage where Jesus actually connects himself to Jonah in a more explicit way even than Mark 4 does. In that passage, the scribes are demanding a sign from Jesus, and he responds saying, "I'm not going to give a sign to this wicked generation." But in verse 4, he says, "For just as Jonah was 3 days and three nights in the belly of the great fish, so will the Son of Man be 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth." Jonah was saved by being in the belly of the fish for 3 days and three nights, but Jesus actually went to the bottom. He actually went to Sheol. He actually died. He was in the grave for 3 days and three nights, not to be saved, but to save us. And Jesus says of himself, a little later, he says, "Behold, something greater than Jonah is here." Something greater than Jonah. Someone who didn't run away when God called him to go to Nineveh. When God called Jesus to go to the heart of wickedness of this earth, when he called him to go to lost, broken, and sinful mankind, Jesus did not run away. He ran to us to deliver that message of salvation. Both Jesus and Jonah were called in to go into wicked places and to preach, and both at great risks to themselves. Jonah ran to Tarshish, but Jesus ran to Nineveh. And there he met with a cross. Something greater than Jonah is here. Salvation belongs to the Lord. That is why his purposes cannot be thwarted, because it doesn't depend on a runaway prophet like Jonah. It depends on Jesus Christ, who was faithful to the call he received. So how does this apply to us? How should we respond to the fact that salvation comes from the Lord? That Jesus did not run away, that God's purposes cannot be thwarted? Well, the first is quite simply, don't run from God. It's easier said than done, but that has to be where we start. When you hear him call, do not go the other way. Why? First, because you can't. Right? We saw that in Jonah. We saw that in the passage in Psalm 139. You can't. Secondly, it's going to be harder. Sometimes we think we don't want to answer God's call because it's going to be too hard. As we see from Jonah, he had a rough go of it trying to run away. It is not easier if God has truly called you and loved you. It is not easier to run away. It might be difficult. It might be extremely difficult. But he's going to make it difficult for you to run away as well. And also, don't run away because God cares for you. The reason he makes it difficult to run away is because he loves you. Because he wants that call for you to fulfill what he has called you to do. He wants you to grow. He wants you to have an impact for his kingdom. Don't run away. But secondly, we have to deal with the reality that at times we do run away from the Lord. And so if you have been running, cry out to your merciful God. Consider, look around if you've been running from God. Consider the difficulties you've met with in your life. You might even be sitting here now in a place where you feel like you've been running to God, and you are like Jonah on the ship, being like, "This is the last place I want to be. This is the last thing I want to be hearing right now. Why is this captain shaking me awake, saying, pray to God, turn to God. But consider, it's getting harder and harder because he's calling you back. He's being merciful to you to not let you get all the way to Tarshish and die alone without him. Consider that the difficulties, that the barriers, and how hard it is to run away from God is actually his mercy for you. Cry out for forgiveness in the difficulty, like Jonah when he was sinking. Repent and turn and be joyfully restored to your calling. If you've been running, cry out to your merciful God. He is merciful. You might wonder, okay, but I've been running a long time. I've been running really fast in the other direction. How's God going to respond when I do turn back? What's he going to think? I often am tempted to think he's going to be like, I was meeting with Darren this week, and we were kind of talking about some of this, kind of discipling and talking about, you know, what does God feel when we do finally turn and repent? I said, I always imagined it like the dad standing on the porch when you're late from curfew, right, or something like that. Like, I've been waiting, you know, like, now we're going to have this talk, and there's going to be some consequences, right? But for those who he loves, he's been pulling you back by making it difficult for you. What we see in stories like the lost sheep, the lost coin, the prodigal son, is he says, rejoice with me for what is lost has been found. He joyfully welcomes us back when we turn back to him. So the third point is, rest assured when you do cry out to your merciful God. Why? Because salvation belongs to him, not to you. You are received back on the basis, not on the basis of how far you ran or didn't run. You are received back on the basis that Jesus Christ didn't run away at all. That is why he receives you back. Doesn't matter if Jonah had gotten a little farther in the sea before the storm happened and the fish happened. God's bringing him back. We are welcomed back when we turn to Christ, when we turn to God in repentance, not because of how far we went or didn't go, not because of what we've done or haven't done, but because of what Jesus did. Because Jesus was faithful to the call that Jonah was not, to go to Nineveh and preach. And so rest assured, it's not dependent on you, it's dependent on what Jesus Christ did on the cross. It's because Jesus didn't run that you who are called will not be able to run. Salvation belongs to the Lord, and he offers it to you. If you've been running, will you take it?